So we're in the bottom of Yud Gimel Beis onto Yud Dalem and Aleph. Let's just review for a moment what we were doing. It's probably worth going five lines from the bottom of Yud Gimel Beis. We'll do it there quickly. So it continues. Yeah, Onin, exactly. So we'll do it quickly, five lines from the bottom of Yud Gimel Beis. Taner Rabbanon. Kohen Gadol Makiv Onin. Kohen Gadol, when he's an Onin, mainly when a relative of his dies before the actual Kfura, that very day. Eino Ochel, he doesn't eat. He Makiv Ein Onin Vein Ochel. He does the Krava, he brings Karbanos, but he's not allowed to eat. Based on Rashi tells us, because based on a pasuk, he learned out from Meiser Sheni that Meiser Sheni and Onin is not allowed to take part in Meiser Sheni. So Kal v'chomer that eating Kadshim, which is a higher level than Meiser Sheni, a Onin is not allowed to eat either. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kol Hayom, he says this strange lashon Kol Hayom. So my Kol Hayom, what do you mean all day? All day what? All day eat? All day don't eat? All day what? So Amar Rava Lo Nitzcha Ela Lahavia Mitoch Beiso. Rabbi Yehuda says it means there's a mitzvah to bring him to the Beis HaMikdash. If he's, let's say, out of the Beis HaMikdash and a relative dies, we actually Dafka do, we bring him in. We don't say don't eat and don't do the korban. We bring him in. And Rashi explains the reason why we bring him in is to remove any of the tsar and the veilas that he's going through, to take his mind off of that. Again, be involved in something else, namely something the hakrava. So says Amar Le Abaye Hashel Rabbi Yehuda Afuka Mafkinale. Now that we say Yehuda tells you to leave, the Tanya Haya Omeru Makriv Agabi Mizbech. The Kohen Gadol is standing on top of the Mizbech. He's offering a carbon. If the Shama Shemes Lo Meis, and he hears that a relative of his dies, Meniach Avodas Viyote Divi Rabbi Yehuda. He leaves, drops everything in the middle of what he's doing, and walks out. So we see Rabbi Yehuda tells him to leave in the middle. Are we going to take him out from his house and bring him to start doing an avoda? Certainly not. So that can't be the explanation of what Kol Hayom means. So Rabbi Yossi therefore says, Omer, Yigmor, to finish it. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Yigmor. So that's a continuation of the Brice. Rabbi Yossi says, no, finish your work as the Kohen Gadol, and then leave. Don't stop in the middle. Kohen Hedyo, it's talking about? According to Rashi, I see. Okay, very good. So we say a Kohen Hedyot says we should tell a Kohen Hedyot to stop in the middle. Are we going to tell a Kohen Gadol to go ahead and start doing the bringing from the house to start the beginning of the work? So that Amris Maisinale Mitoch Beiso, and you say to bring the Kohen Gadol from the house. Kohen Rav Yehuda is more machmir. He says to stop the work in the middle. So El Amar Rava. Rava says my Kol Hayom Lomar She'eno Oved Kol Hayom. He does not work the entire day. Gzeir Hashem Yochal. He might eat. Fundamentally, Rabbi Yehuda says he's allowed to actually do hakrava, like the first opinion. But Rabbi Yehuda was concerned that he might eat, so he's not allowed to do any work until the nighttime. So Amar Le Rav Bar Abba, Le Rava, Mi Gazer Rabbi Yehuda, Shema Yochal. Is Rabbi Yehuda really concerned when a person's involved in something, he might come to eat something? He can't do the hakrava as an onin because he might come to eat the carbon as an onin? V'hatanan, the mission tells us, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Isha Acheres Maskin Elo, Shema Thomas Ishto. That Rabbi Yehuda says, not only do you have a backup Kohen Gadol, you have to have a backup wife for the Kohen Gadol, lest his first wife die. V'i Maisina Ishto, Avid Avoda, V'lo Gazer Rabbi Yehuda Shema Yochal. And let's say his wife dies. So he said, oh, continue to do the voda. So aren't we concerned he might get a little hungry and take a piece of the meat that's being roasted there? So why aren't we concerned? Anytime you're doing a hakrava, you should be concerned you might come to eat it. So the Gemara gives a simple answer. No. When it comes to Yom Kippur, came in the Yom Kippurim, Yom Kippur, when he's doing the avoda, if his wife were to die, Yehuda was concerned the wife might die, we don't think he's going to go take a piece of the meat that's being roasted. Nobody's eating. This is Yom Kippur. However, here in our case, a regular Kohen Gadol during the regular day, the rest of the year.
Only Kohen cannot eat kodshim.
A Kohen Gadol as an Onin can eat Kachim.
And what about Kohen Idiot?
Can eat Kachim. No one's allowed to eat. But a Kohen can't do the Avoda. A Kohen Gadol can do the Avoda. Uh-huh. Yehuda says, we don't even let the Kohen Gadol do the Avoda because he might come to eat. So, however, in our case, a regular weekday, the Chuliyama Achli, where everybody else, all the other Kohanim in the base of Mikdash are busy eating their various karbanos, so the Kohen Gadol might forget and he might come to eat. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, we tell the Kohen Gadol to refrain from any avoda lest he come to eat it. So in the case of Yom Kippur, where he has a backup Kohen Gadol, a backup wife rather, is it going to be a aninus if his first wife dies? V'ha migarshe? because he divorced her based on the complicated Tanai from yesterday. If his first wife dies, ends up being a divorce, so he's never really married to the wife in the first place, so he doesn't become an Onin. An Onin is actually only if one of your seven closest relatives died, one of them being a wife. But if this is a divorced wife, that's not going to establish a din of Onin. So Gemara says, Mislo Chayil, you're right, there's no official Aninus that's Chal in the Kohen Gadol. He's not obligated to bury this ex-wife. Allah, Atshuda Milo Mitrade, will he not be very much involved and sad, torrid? So look at Rashi. Rashi says, Milo Mitrade, Ubekudshim Ba'inan Simcha, Ugdula. You have to have a happiness and a sense of feeling of Gdula. You're supposed to eat their karbanos the way kings eat their sudas. So if the guy is single, the Kohen Gadol rather is sad because his ex-wife, who's not really an ex-wife because they got into a fight or got into an argument, is simply because of technicality in becoming a Kohen Gadol, having one wife, and that's why she ended up dying, he's certainly going to be sad and won't be roy for eating.
What about the first original wife, if she dies?
That's what it's talking about. If his original wife dies...
The second one?
Right.
Okay. And then is that name. So this specific case, if his wife died, is the original wife or the second wife with the Tnai?
So the original wife, because he's married to this original wife.
So why is not Anun?
No, but that's the point, because since we built in this Tanai, that if she dies, retroactively, Mafreya, they were divorced,
yeah,
so he's never the wife.
He lives with him 50 years, all of a sudden he can forget about it.
No, that's the point. Halachically, you're only an official Onin if your wife dies.
Yeah.
So the Gemara points out, asks the question, well, based on the Tanai we spoke of yesterday, so the Tanai is going to say she was actually divorced before she actually died.
Okay.
So the Maisa, she wasn't his wife. So there's no real Aninus.
Technical.
Right. Oh, but he's still... Right.
This end the story. Now they're going to talk about what about the mother.
But he's obviously very sad. But he's sad because it's his wife of 50 years. So that's what Mar says. You're right. So even though there's no real halachic Aninus there because they're divorced, he's sad and won't be able to take part in the kutchen properly.
I don't really get the point of this, Gemara.
Because it's just a havamina.
It's asking on the question,
yes,
of Ravada Barapa.
Exactly. Right. How could it even be a question that why would he ever come to, why couldn't he eat it?
Right. How could there be a havamina?
Right.
There be a nidus,
right.
A maisa doesn't have
anything. Right, because they're not eating anything on Yom Kippur, obviously. Okay, so says the Gemara. A new Mishnah. This is the second Mishnah we've got to, I think. We've done one Mishnah, 14 blot, right? This is the second Mishnah, I think, of the Masechta. Yes. What?
Is the second one on?
Second Mishnah. So we went a nice while without a new Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, continuing discussing the Shivas Yimei Miluim, Kol Shivas Hayamim, this entire seven-day period prior to Yom Kippur, whose the Kohen Gadol would be Zorek Es Adam, he would sprinkle the blood, who Maktir Saktoris, he would be bring the incense, and Meitiv Es Aneiros, he would fix Meitiv Lashon of Tova, he would clean out the candles of the menorah. Umakiv Es Arosh Ves Aregel, he would be makiv the head and the leg of the carbon tamid. Rishar Koyamim, so that's during this seven-day period. As Rashi explains, you see Rashi in the Mishnah, Hu Zorik Es Hadam Shel Timidim. Kidesha Yehei Ragil Umuzuman Bavoda Shema Kippur, you want to get him accustomed to doing avoda, the Shechita, the Zrika, the Kabbalah, all those things. So he does that, along with all the other avodas during the regular avodas during those 7 days, just to get him accustomed to the avodas. Because the rest of the year, there's no obligation for the Kohen Gadol to do any work. However, says the Mishnah, continuing, Vishar Kol Yamim, the rest of the year, in Ratzel Hakriv Makriv, if he wants to, he can. He could say, you know what, today's my day. Normally, the way the halacha is, we'll see Mishnahs later on, they had these payasos, these lots they would do. So each, there were four payasos, and they would divide them out. Let's do a whole lottery. And who's Zolcha to do the different, the relevant avoda? The Kohen Gadol wakes up one day and says, listen, today I want to do it. He wins. He trumps everybody else, and there's no payasos for that day. So if he wants to, he could be makrivit. Because as we know, the klal is, says the Mishnah, the Kohen Gadol is allowed to be makriv first if he chooses, and he's able to take the portion. If, let's say, they're dividing the chatas amongst the Kohanim, the chatas would go to the Kohanim to eat, and part of the shlamim would go to the Kohanim to eat. The Kohen Gadol could say, I'm a bit hungry today, I want to pick first, and he gets first dibs. So there's an interesting din here, that if you look at Rashi, makriv chelik barosh, Rosh Hu Lahakdir Ulahakriv Kol Chelek Shivkar. He can be Makdir and he can be Makriv. So there's a diak from this lashon of Makter for a second. So if you look at the Hagos Bach, Siv Gimel, Siv, that Gimel there, he takes out the word Lahakter. He says it should be Lahakriv only. Now, what's the word Lahakter doing? Lahakriv is to bring a carbon. Lahakter is to Lachor do Lakhtoris. So following this discussion, when it comes to Hilchos Mila, the Ramah brings down that one person shouldn't be the Sandik for two different babies, because the idea is Sandik somehow, in a deeper level, you'll explain this to us maybe, Sandik was modeled after Ketores. And the halacha is, we'll see also, I think Omer Beis talks about this, the Ketores, when they did Payasos, the various lots for the Ketores of Oda, if you once had Ketores in the past, you couldn't do it a second time. The reason being, Ketores was a segula for Ashiris, for richness. That's why people say Pitam Ketores out of a cloth based on a base Yosef, because if you read it from a cloth, it's as if you're actually doing the Ketores. That reason is also very dangerous. If you miss a word, you skip a word of Ketores, you chayav misa, says the Braisa. Be very careful when saying the Ketores on a cloth. Either way, so somehow Sandik is based on this idea of Ketores. So there's a special segula, so you have to share the wealth. So it's not fair to have it be Sandik two different times, you only do it one time. So, however, the Noda Behuda writes that the custom in his area was that the Av Beistin, or the Rav of the Shul, the community, he would be the Sandik for every single Bris Mila. So clearly the Minog is not the way of the Ramah. So the Chassam Sofer explains, based on this Mishnah here, he says, the Kohen Gadol is like the Rav of the city. The Kohen Gadol, based on this Rashi, is able to, whenever he decides, he could be Makti the Ketores. That's Lashon Lahakter. Whenever he wants, he could be Makti the Ketores. Even though he did it once before, twice before, he's allowed to trump. When it comes to the Kohen Gadol, when it comes to the Rav of the city, he can take the Ketores. He can take the Sandik as many times as he wants. And that's why perhaps the Bach takes out the word Lahakter. He says it's not true, that it's not fair that Kohen Gadol could do Makti many times, that you have to share the wealth as well. Okay. Says the Gemara. The Gemara wants to know, Man Tana, who is the author of this Mishnah that says all 7 days here that the Kohen Gadol would be doing the Avodah? So Amar Rav Chista says, Dilo Rabbi Akiva. This cannot be in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, because the Rabbi Akiva, so I think it's based on the Mishnah later on. What's the next Mishnah we have here? Let's see. Because there's a mission that says all 7 days, not only is he doing the Avodah, we actually do some Mechatas. We spring some of the Paraduma on top of him. I think that's what it talks about. Is it, what's the next mission here? I'm not sure the next mission is even. Okay, but I believe there's a mission that tells us that during these 7 days, we sprinkle upon him the Kohen Gadol Mechatas. We may have mentioned this already before. In case the Kohen Gadol, let's say, was Tameh, we sprinkle all 7 days some of the Mechatas to make him Tower, just in case he was Tameh Meis. So the Rav Chista says, our author is the low Rabbi Kiva, is not Rabbi Kiva. Because the Rabbi Kiva, if it was, Ha'amar, he held, Tahor, Shenafla Alav Hazah Tameyaso. So let's say a person who's Tahor, and they sprinkle some mechatas from the Parduma on top of a person's tower, that actually makes him into somebody who's Tameh. The mechatas had this very weird power. It turned everybody into the opposite of what they were. If you were Tameh and you had water sprinkled on you, you become Tahor. But if you're Tahor and have water sprinkled on you, you actually become Tameh. How do we see this? So Hechi Avod Avoda, how are you able to do the Avoda? So you look at Rashi there, Hechi Avod Avoda, Kol Shiva, how can you do all seven? Hari Mazin Alav. Every single day of 7 days, person's busy sprinkling water on the Kohen Gadol, just in case he was Tameh Meis. But let's say the Kohen Gadol never actually became Tameh Meis. So you're sprinkling waters on him anyway. So you're making him Tameh by sprinkling waters. How then is he able to do the Avodah on these 7 days? So it must not be like Rabbi Akiva. So where do we find the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that he held a Tahor person who gets water sprinkled becomes Tameh? So the Tanya, the Braisa says, V'hiza ha-Tahor al ha-Tameh. The Pasuk says in Parshas, Chukas. So what does it mean, al ha-tameh? If a Tahor person sprinkles it on a Tameh person, of course he's sprinkling it on a Tameh person. Who else would he be sprinkling the water on? So the drasha is, al ha-tameh Tahor. If you sprinkle on somebody who's Tameh, dafka, only on somebody who's Tameh, does he become Tahor. But va'al ha-tahor, but if you sprinkle on somebody who's Tahor, is the dik, you make him Tameh, divrei Rabbi Kiva. So there we see the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, that yes, if you sprinkle mechatas on top of a person who is Tahor, in fact makes him Tameh. So the question is, how, according to Rabbi Kiva, did he do the avodah? Now, continuing the Braisa, the Chacham and Omrim, they argue and they make a different drasha. The Al HaTameh is not coming to tell me that a person who's Tahor will become Tameh from the waters. Rather, the Chacham and Omrim, Ein Hadvarm Halalu Amurim Ela B'Dvarm HaMekablim Tumo. That these words are only in reference to things that are Mekabel Tumo. So, what does it mean, Mekablim Tumo? So look at the continuation. Ma'ihi, what is this referring to? What do the Chachamim mean that the Ein Medvar Mekablim Tumah? So he quotes a mission now, I assume in Parah, right? The mission Parah says, Kiditnan, Niskabin Lahazos Al Behema. Let's say you have intention, you have the Mechatas, you stick your, you have like the different weeds, reeds are needed for the sprinkling. You have this, the Givolim. So you take it and dip it in the water and you start sprinkling it on top of whatever you need to be Mitahir. So the person has Kavana to do Hazah, to sprinkle it onto Behema. But accidentally, v'hiza ahadam. But then he ends up sprinkling on a person. So what happens to the remainder waters on these, this reed that I'm holding? So the halacha is, the Mishnah says, im yesh be'ezov yeshana. If you have water remaining on the ezov, how do you define ezov in English? What type of a?
Hyssop.
A hyssop. So if you have water remaining on this hyssop, so yeshana, you repeat it again. You could use the water still that's remaining on top of the behema that you wanted to be metahir. We'll explain this in a second, what this all means. Im yesh be'ezov, let me skip the line. Niskaven lahazos al-hadam. Let's say you had intention to sprinkle onto a person. Accidentally v'hiza al-behema, but you end up sprinkling onto a behema. Im yesh be'ezov, if there is water remaining on the hyssop, lo yishana. You do not repeat it. So this is what Chacham is referring to. What does this all mean? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi explains, one second here. So the question is that you look at Rashi Lo Yishana. Let's do that one, I guess. You see Rashi Lo Yishana. The reason why you shouldn't repeat a, you have to dip it back in. You can't use the remaining waters. The Nifsalu B'Malacha. The Lacha is because the Hazah Shabahema Ain Hazah Aleh Havli Kemaim Shinasas Behen Malacha. The Lacha is that the Mechatas, the waters of the Paraduma that are used to be Tahir, person is Tamei Meis, you cannot use those waters. You can't have any malacha being performed to those waters. If some malacha, it was used for something, those waters are disqualified. So let's say you took the waters and you wanted to sprinkle it onto a person, accidentally sprinkled it onto a behema. Behema doesn't need a any type of water sprinkled on it. So by using those waters, that was a malacha was performed on the behema. That for disqualifies the remaining waters on the hyssop. If, however, you wanted to do it in behema, but lemaisa, you ended up doing it onto a person. Well, person is something that is supposed to get watered sprinkled, and that's not considered a malacha, therefore will not disqualify the remaining waters. So this whole drasha, that's what the Chacham learned from the words al hatame. He makes this drasha that that the hazah only works on things that are makabalim tumah. That if you, in other words, but if you sprinkle it on a behema, which is not makabal tumah, that will in fact disqualify the remainder of the waters. Okay, let's continue with the Gemara now. My time in Rabbi Kiva. What's the reason of Rabbi Kiva that he held that the word al hatame that seemed to be drasha that only on a tame person does the water make you tahor, but on a tar person it makes you tame? What was the reason? Why did he make a drasha? So the Gemara explains as follows: Nicht rachmana v'hiza hatahor alav. The tar person should sprinkle on him, and of course we know who's on him, referring to a person who's tame. Just say Allah, that would be sufficient. My Allah tame, why does it have to specify onto a tame person? That seems to be obvious, and therefore the word is superfluous. Shma mina, says Rabbi Kiva, al hatame tahor, v'hatar tame. Oh, dafka, on a tame, does it make a tame person tar? The drasha is, the diak is, when it's on a tahor person, it makes him tame.
How come, why?
The reasoning, we don't know. Well, the Rabbi Kiva will explain, he'll quote a pasuk in a second, that paraduma is something beyond our understanding. Paraduma is the paradigm of any, it's the chok. The chok doesn't make any sense to us. There's no way to explain. Rabbanan say, no, the reason why it says al-hatame is ha'il dvar ha'mekablim tumahu da'asa. That comes to teach me, no, the drasha said before. The word al-hatame means only if you sprinkle it on a person who's tame, will the remaining waters be considered tar. But if you sprinkle it on something that's not tame, namely an animal, that will disqualify the remaining waters. Aval hacha, continue the chachamim, here in our case, if you sprinkle it onto a person who's tar, kavachomerhu, that's a kavachomer that the person's going to be tame. Im al-hatame tahor, al-tar lokal shikain, if the waters have the ability to make somebody who's tame into somebody who's tar, certainly, it will keep a person who's tahor as well. So that seems pretty logical. Rabbi Kiva says, no. Hainu de Kamar, this is exactly what Shlomo said. The Kamar Shlomo, he said, Amarti achachma v'hi rechoka mimeni. I said one of the things that Shlomo Melech wanted to be, he requested from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wanted to be very wise. As wise as Shlomo was, nobody was ever as wise, probably never will ever be as wise as he was. Still, despite that fact, he was never able to really grasp the ideas of Paradumim, because it was so confusing. That person is Tameh is Tahor, but a person is Tahor becomes Tameh, and that's exactly what he meant. So Rabbi Akiva says, you're right, it doesn't make any sense. But I don't care that it doesn't make sense, because Shlomo Melech didn't understand it, it's not meant to make sense. Continues the Gemara and says, Rabbanon, Hahu Lemaza Ulamazin Olav Tahor, Vinogeya Behen Tameh. So he says, what does Chacham do with that pasuk? Where Shlomo testifies to the point that Paraduma is something that's so distant from any Chachma, it's referring to the following halacha, that a person who's mazer, umazin alav, the person who's doing the sprinkling, and the person who gets sprinkled on from these waters, he becomes tahor. However, a person is nogeh behem tameh. If you touch the waters just like that, you become tameh. That's what made no sense according to the Rabbanon. So the Gemara asks, according to Rabbanon,
I just say that's what Shlomo HaMelech meant.
Yes, that was the confusing part. That only if you touch it, you become tameh. But carrying it and sprinkling it and getting sprinkled on, that doesn't make you tameh. So Gemara says, "Umaze tahor." Is it really true that the person who does the sprinkling, he is tahor? Vaksiv, the pasuk tells me in Parshas Chukas. Parshas Chukas is where all the halachas of Paraduma are discussed. Umaze mehanida, the person who sprinkles the water, yechabes begadav. He has to wash his clothing. Sounds like the person who does the sprinkling becomes tameh. My maze nogea. No, it doesn't really mean maze in the pasuk. It means nogea. It means when it says maze, it really means the person who touches it. Ein hachinami, the person who actually does the sprinkling, will be tahor. Marsim v'haksiv maze v'haksiv nogea. You look in the pasukim, it sometimes uses the word nogea, sometimes uses the word maze. So clearly, maze does not mean nogea, because the Torah knows how to use the word nogea. In fact, it uses the word nogea. So why would it ever call the word maze if it really refers to nogea? So it must be two different things. One's maze, one's nogea. And maze is going to be tameh then. Vote furthermore, maze by kibus begadim nogea lo by kibus begadim. Furthermore, there's a difference. When it comes to the psukim by a maze, he actually requires to wash his clothing. The pasuk by nogea says he doesn't have to wash his clothing. So clearly, the maze cannot be referring to nogea. So ella, so it sounds right now that maze should become tame according to the psukim. Elamai maze, what does maze mean? It doesn't mean maze to sprinkle, it rather means nose. The person who actually carries it and lifts the water, he becomes tameh. But the actual person who's sprinkling it is tahor. So Gemara says, if maze really means nose, the nichto rachmana nose, just have the Torah write the word nose. We have other places where the word nose is used in the Torah. Write nose, don't write maze, and don't confuse us. So my time aksiv maze, why did it write maze instead of nose, instead of lifting it? This comes to teach us that in order to be metame when you're nose, when you're carrying the waters, has to be enough of a shear that you're carrying that's enough to be maze to sprinkle onto somebody else. But if you're carrying very little water, that's not enough to do maze, that won't contaminate a person, that won't make him tame. Gemara says, well, this definition, this explanation, that maze really means nose, and it says maze to teach me that you need a shear of maze to be metame when you're nose, that's hanicha, that makes sense, leman d'amar hazad tzichashir. That only makes sense according to the opinion, machlokas and zvachim, that Rashi quotes, that you require shear. To do hazah, you need a minimum shear of hazah of water. That makes sense. However, ela leman d'amar, the opinion that held hazah ain tzichashir, that you don't require shear, that even a small amount of water is sufficient to do paraduma, the sprinkling of the waters. So Michael Maimar, simply a nose who carries a kol shu of water is enough. Why use the lashon of maze for nose? I understand, again, if the word maze is being used to substitute nose, and why is maze being used to teach me that you need a shear of maze for the nose to be tamed. But if you hold that maze never requires a shear, you can use any amount of water for sprinkling. So why does the pasuk use the word maze instead of the word nose? So Ma'ikla Meimar, what are you going to explain? So Gemara explains as follows: Afilu l'man damer hazah ein tzricha shear. Even according to this opinion in Zvachim, that hazah does not require shear, that's not really true. Hani mili agava de gavra. That's only true in terms of talking about when sprinkling some water onto the person, any amount of water could hit the person. That much we don't care about. Even a kol shu of water, as long as the kol shu of water touches the person, he becomes tahor. Aval bimane, when it comes to the kli that's holding the waters, tzricha shir, that requires a shir. So again, one opinion thinks Everybody agrees that when you have the kli, when you draw the water, and you have the whole paraduma mixture, you require a certain shear of the in the kli. The machlokas is when you take the water out on the hyssop and you start sprinkling it, you have to have him hit a certain amount, has to hit the guy to become tar, or even a kol should hit the guy. But everyone agrees in the kli you require shear. So what shear do you require? You require a shear of a mazah. How much is needed to perform a mazah? And therefore, if a nosi carries this amount of shear, he's going to become tamei. How do we know this? That you require shear. The Tanan, the Mishnah tells us, it's a Mishnah in Para. Kami yehei behen vihei kidei haza. How much it has to be in the kli, and you will be enough to do haza. Kidei shi yitbal, there should be enough that you should be able to dip the rashi givolin viyaze. You should be able to stick the heads of the hyssop into the water and be able to have something catch to absorb some of it and be able to sprinkle it. That's the shear. So all that that's really the end of the discussion in terms of paraduma. Now the Gemara goes back and Abaye says, going back to original discussion. Original discussion was as follows. Who is the author of our Mishnah? The Mishnah says that the Kohen Gadol does the avodah during the 7 days. So we ask the question. We know it from elsewhere that you sprinkle the mechatas on top of the Kohen Gadol every single day. So according to Rabbi Kiva, that makes you a tar person into Tameh. How could the Kohen Gadol do the avodah? So it must not be in accordance with Rabbi Kiva. Abaye says no. Afilu tamer Rabbi Kiva. Even Rabbi Kiva could be our author of a Mishnah. How could that be true? If the Kohen Gadol happened to be tar and you sprinkle water, he becomes Tameh. Says Rabbi Kiva. Says Abaye rather. De'avid avodah kuliyoma. He does the avodah, the tum and everything the entire day. And then lifnei, right before sundown, madele, they sprinkle some mechates on him. Vitavel, then he goes into the mikvah. And then avid harav shemesh, and then there's a sunset. So when we say, according to Rabbi Kiva, the lach is, let's say a person who's tahor, and you sprinkle mechates on top of this person who's tahor, it makes him tummy. But he's only tummy for 1 day. If you're tummy, what's the lach of your tummy? You go to the mikvah, and you wait for sunset, and you're completely tahor. So they didn't do the sprinkling in the beginning of the day before he performed the avodah. They did the sprinkling at the end of the day after he did the avodah, right before sunset, so he's able to get in the avodah, and he had the water sprinkled upon him.
What do we see in the Mishnah that he did the avodah with the mechatas?
Right, so I was trying to look for that as well. We saw that, must have been a week ago, when they had machlokas. Right, you found it?
No.
Oh, you like this, the picture. Oh, yeah. These are some nice pictures in the front, yeah.
I want to see them.
Yeah. So, we discussing Tefillah Bezmana Mitzvah, Rabbi Yossi, and the Mechatas on day 1, day 2, day 3, day 5, day 6, day 7. They skipped day 4. So based on that, we see they sprinkled water on him every single day. Right, here's the Gemara, Daf Ches. So it's a Brisa. The Brisa in Ches and Aleph, we also quoted it earlier in the Masechta Daf Dal. It's not a Mishnah, but Daf Ches, around like 15 lines down, it says, first word in the line is, Neima hani tanai kani tanai. It says, Tanya, echad zev, mazon lav kol shiva. All 7 days, he would do mikol chatos. Machok is whether you have to do all seven or only 3 and 7. So that's that discussion, and we bring it down to halacha. That's not a mission, but apparently it's an accepted brisa. Okay. So now the Gemara goes on to analyze the various parts of the Mishnah. So I always tell people who want to start learning Kachim, not many people want to do that, but those who do, or people who are learning Yuma, I tell them that Yuma is a great introduction to Kachim. Kachim could be very challenging, it's new halachas, new concepts, but Yuma is an easy way to kind of ease your way into getting familiar with the Kachim. So right here we're going to get to the part of Kachim, people don't know what the various karbonos are, you don't know the Seder Avodah, you don't know what goes on. So this Gemara and the next few blot are going to get into discussion about the Seder Avodah, the regular day, what was the process, what was the order of events that took place. So the Mishnah has told us, the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, Umaktir es haktoras umeitiv es haneros. The Kohen Gadol would first burn the incense, and then he would clean out the neros, the candles that were in the menorah. So Alma, we see from here, ktoras bereish b'hadar neros. So the first thing you do is the ktoras, and the next thing you do is clean out the neros. Or minhu, however, based on a Mishnah and Talmud. By the way, Talmud is the other place to get an introduction. Talmud also, there's a lot of overlap between Talmud and Yuma about the various of order of the Seder Hayom. So the quote of Mishnah and Talmud that says as follows: Misha zocha b'dishin mizbeach ha-panimim. The one who is zocha, that's part of the payasos. I'm sorry, no, this is still from a Gemara. This is a Mishnah in Yuma, I think. No, this is a Mishnah in Talmud. Okay, it is a Mishnah in Talmud. So this Mishnah in Talmud says, during the various payasos, so one of the payasos they would have, people would be zocha to the dishin mizbeach ha-panimi. What does that mean?
Doing what?
Dishin is oh, payasos. Payasos, we spoke, you call pais. It pais.
Pais.
You got pasos, you guys called it, with Ricky's friend paisim. Who was here two weeks ago. Paisim, you said, but really in the Gemara we call it payasos. Okay.
This is not really plural word for this, because usually pais is lottery.
Right.
And a guy usually will win one time in his life, so it's one pais. But you know what? One for my city, won three times.
Wow.
It's like winning the lottery here. It's like winning, I don't know, Powerball or whatever.
Right.
Can you imagine three times?
You must buy a lot of tickets.
I don't know. I'm not into it.
Okay. So the Mishnah Talmud says, Misha zocha b'dish mizbeach ha-panimi. So remember, there are two mizbechos. There's an outer one, which is the main one we always talk about, that the tamen goes on. All the karbanos go on the outer one. And then which was simply for the ketores. So the person is zocha to the dish mizbeach ha-panimi. He would remove the ashes from the top of this inner mizbeach. And then the Mishnah goes on and say, Misha zocha b'menorah. And then the next guy is zocha to fix and clean the menorah. And the next guy is zocha, Misha zocha b'ketores. And the ketores afterward, the guy gets to offer the ketores. We see from this Mishnah, Talmud, that the neros come before the ketores. Well, our Mishnah said the Ketores comes before the Neros. So what's the order? Seems to be Machlokas. Rav Huna, Man Tana Tamid. Who is the author of Maseches Tamid? Well, the Maseches Tamid is the second to last Masechet of Kachim. The last Gemara we have in Kachim. The last one's Midos. We have just simply Mishnayos. The second to last one is Tamid. So who's the author of Maseches Tamid? Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMetzapeh, who he is the author. So we see we have different authors. I'm not sure who the author of Yuma is at this point. Whoever authored Yuma was not actually the author. Don't we have the opposite? Because another mission in Talmud tells us that Tanan, Balo Lekerem Mizrachis Sfonis. The Kohen gets to the northeast corner of the Mizbeach, Nosin Mizrachis Sfona, and then he sprinkles the blood on that corner. Then he goes to the Maravis Dromis, he goes to the southwest corner, and Nosin Maravah Dromis. He places blood there. The Tanan Allah, and on that Mishnah, says Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMetzapeh, Mishnah Batamid, Mizrachis, Tzfonis, Nosa Mizracha Tzfona. Well, in the northeast, you place the blood on the northeastern corner. Maravis Dromis, however, in the southwest corner, you don't just do one at the corner, rather, Nosin Marava, Vacharkach Nosin Droma. You first place one in the west side of that corner, then you place on the south side of that corner. So we see, however, Rabbi Shimon argues on the Mishnah Batamid. So a Stam Mishnah, an unauthored Mishnah in Talmud, is not Rabbi Shimon ben Metzapah, therefore, he cannot be the author of Talmud. So it seems to be a stira in Yuma and Talmud. Where it says, no, El Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Man Tana Seder Yuma, Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMetzapeh. No, the author of Yuma is Rabbi Ish ben Ish HaMetzapeh, different than the author of Talmud. So you're right, there are discrepancies, but that's because of different authors, and they had different opinions what the order of the Beis HaMikdash actually was. So Gemara says, okay, fine. So now that we've established that there's a different author for Talmud and a different author for Yuma, so let's work within Maseches Yuma. We say Maseches Yuma was written by one person, namely Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMetzapeh. So I'll show you that there's a stira even in the Mishnayos here in Maseches Yuma. What's the stira? Rami Seder Yoma. I'll throw a stira from one Mishnah in Yuma to another Mishnah in Yuma. Ditznan, the Mishnah tells us later on. Pious Hasheni. What was the second pious? What was the second lot? Mi Shochet. The first guy, he shechs it. And the way it worked was, Rashi tells us some of the background here. We don't have to go through all the Rashis. But I think the way it works is they stuck their fingers out, and then the guy who gets picked, so he gets the Shechita, and then everybody next to him, they have like the next 13 people next to him, got the next avodah is in line. So the first guy would do the Shechita. Mi Shochet, mi Zorek, who would do the sprinkling of the blood? Mi Medash Mizbeach HaPnimi, who's going to clean out the inner Mizbeach? Mi Medash Nis HaMenorah, who's going to clean the menorah out? Mi Mala Evarm LaKevesh, who's going to bring up the various limbs? Pious HaShlishi, what was the third pious? Chadashim L'Ketoros. The new ones go to the Ketoros, as I mentioned before, that they never ever had a guy do the Ketoros a second time. Only one per person. So if you ever had the Ketores, you have to wait on the side for this lottery. All the people who were never Zocha, you come forward and you get to be part of this lottery here. Bovi Hifiso, and then they go ahead and they do the Payasos. So what comes out from this Mishnah, however, we see that here, that the... that the menorah took place in the first pious, and the ketores took place in the second pious. So menorah is before the ketores. Well, our mission right here in Amun Aleph said ketores took place before the menorah. So Amar Abaye says lo kasher kanba tavas shtei neros kanba tavas chamesh neros. One referring to the first two neros, and one referring to the last five neros. Meaning, they had seven candles on menorah. They didn't come in and clean them all at once. First they went in, we'll see psukim later on in a few blot. First they cleaned the first two neros, and then the coin stopped. And then they performed the ketores. They went back in to clean the remaining five menorahs. So that's an austere. Our Mishnah talks about when it says you first do the ketores and then the neros. That's referring to the last five menorahs, last five candles. The ketores and then the last five candles. The Mishnah later on is talking about doing the first two candles first, and then doing the ketores afterwards, and there's no stira. That's the order. Again, two neros, ketores, and then five neros. Gemara says, Lememra, is this to tell us? Did the ketores mafsiklu? So all right, we already established, we have that as an assumption. The Gemara tells us later on that you have to split up two and five. The machok, the debate that what do you interrupt when you separate the first two candles that you clean out and the last five candles, what are you separating with? So is this to say that we hold that the ketores is what's being mafsik? That's what you do in between the two and the five? V'ha Abaye misade maracha mishmei de Gemara. Abaye put together, he organized the Seder Voda in the name of the Gemara, which means he has a certain Mesorah he had, as follows. Uvadam ha-tamid mafsik lu. And he said, no, with the blood of the tamid is how you're mafsik it. So what happens, according to Abaye, is you would first clean out the first two candles of the menorah, and then the kohen would go sprinkle the blood on the tamid, and then he would go do the remaining five candles. So it wasn't divided by the ketores. In fact, it was divided by the tamid, the dam shel tamid. So Amri, the response is, lo kasha, ha'hula abba shaul ha'hala rabbanon. This is machlokas. How you divide the two and the five. One opinion thinks you divide it with the blood. One opinion thinks you divide it with the ketores. The Tanya, where do we see such a machlokas? Tanya says, lo yitav es aneros v'charkach yaktir. Don't finish the neros and then the maktir. Ela yaktir v'charkach yitiv. First, do ketores and then finish the remaining five. So according to Tanakama is like our Mishnah right here that says you do two, you do the ketores, and then you finish the rest of the cleaning out of the neros. Abba Shaul argues and says, Omer, meitiv v'charkach maktir. No, you first finish off all seven, the last five you finish, which was seemingly interrupted with the dam, and then after the five you do the haketara. Okay, so I think we should stop here, though it's early, because the explanations of Rabbanan and Avishal go well into the next daf, so this is probably a good place to stop then. Okay.
Shkoyach.
So there's no hechach anymore that the Mishnayos and Tamid are associated. Mishnayos here in Yuma. Once we say